From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Governor Pritzker and Democratic leaders from the House and Senate announce a budget deal for the next fiscal year. They say it's a balanced budget that totals more than $50 billion.
This budget makes historic investments that will benefit our state for years to come. As governor, it's my job to not just look at what's right in front of us, but to prepare for what's ahead.
Nearly 2,000 survivors of Catholic Church sexual abuse in Illinois were documented by state investigators, according to the Attorney General. Before their investigation began, there were 103 substantiated Catholic Church child sex abusers in Illinois, the result of individual cases reported by church officials under loosely enforced guidelines. Additional findings from the Attorney General, now 451 Catholic clerics and religious brothers cited as bona fide youth sex abusers.
When such trust is betrayed with abuse to children, and there are efforts to cover it up, the call for accountability should be resounding.
That's the Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul. He issued findings of a long investigation into clergy abuse within the Catholic Church in Illinois. Also, there was a budget deal at the State House, and have lawmakers and the governor left some loose ends in that spending plan? We'll discuss it all coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Also with us, we have Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also joining us, and back with us again, Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois. Hannah, you've been burning the midnight oil on this budget, so thanks for taking some time to be with us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
And Hannah, let's start out with the budget this week. Of course, lawmakers, the governor, they could not get this done by their self-imposed deadline last week. But just a few days later, they work out a deal. How did that come about?
Well, as things always happen in the State House this time of year, it happened through negotiations and a heavy dose of pressure. There was a lot of grumbling in the, we'll call it 30 some odd hours after on Wednesday, the day that lawmakers came back to Springfield after, like you said, missing that May 19th deadline that they'd set on themselves for last Friday. On Wednesday, came back to Springfield, and in the afternoon, Governor and House Speaker Chris Welch, Senate President Don Harmon, announced a deal on the budget. And of course, announcements like this are meant to create pressure to ensure that there actually will be a deal at the end. I think reasonable people can debate whether or not you should announce a deal, even if there isn't, obviously final agreement, but that is what happened.
Now, Charlie, if for people that listen to this show, every year, once a budget is approved, I ask the same question to you because it's always touted as a balanced budget. The governor, we heard him say that at the start of the show. From what you've seen, does this budget look balanced?
I guess I would answer that question, what would you say, sort of in a wishy-washy fashion. It depends on how you define balanced. If you define balanced as here is what we are authorizing to be spent, and here is what we expect we'll have on hand in terms of revenue to cover that amount, yes, it's balanced. I don't have the numbers, and I doubt anybody does at the moment. But when we talk about this budget appropriating $50.6 billion against expected revenues of $50.7 billion, we're basically talking about the general revenue funds, the state's general funds, or its operating budget, the checkbook balance, if you will. There are probably half again as much money appropriated out of other funds that will be part of the final budget and are included in this thousand and thousand upon page budget that the Senate approved and the House is going to approve. We're taping this Friday morning. By this time tomorrow, it will be approved by the House. And so that's why I say it depends on how you define it. And one of the things that people will argue, and I think it was Senator Wynn Stoller argued in the Senate last night, this isn't balanced because we have this outstanding pension liability. And I'm thinking to myself, I guess in a sense that's true, but I would say, no, it's not relevant. And the reason I say it is because, yeah, we owe something, we have an unfunded liability in the neighborhood of maybe $140 billion. And you say, oh my God, that's horrible. Yeah, but on the other hand, that's money that's going to be paid out over probably, it will have to be available to be paid to people who are now working and who retire 20, 30 years from now. And so it's not as though it had to be paid all at once. And as I've said often in the past, if the day ever comes that the state has to pay its full pension liabilities and in one fell swoop, we're going to have a lot more problems to worry about than that. And another way to look at it is, I've lived here in Springfield, since 1974. When we came down here, we bought a house. 10 years later, we bought a second house. And when we bought these houses, we had a mortgage. And we had regular monthly payments to make. There was a legal document that said every month you have to pay so much. But I've been down here long enough that it's all paid off, and now I no longer have mortgages. But all during that time, we considered our budget balanced, even though we had tens of thousands of dollars of obligations out there. So in a sense, the unfunded liability is sort of like when you have a mortgage payment. It's out there, you have to pay it, there's a schedule, but it's not all going to come due at once.
I should mention that Charlie is a retiree from the State University Retirement System, and I am a member of that system, still working at this point. Hannah, let me go back to what we were just talking about there, that the budget is balanced. There are some, I don't want to call them tricks, that might not be the proper way to say this, but there are some accounting maneuvers in this budget, though, to probably also to help get a deal done, but could create some problems, it seems, down the road. Am I going out too far on a limb there?
It's not entirely clear to me as we sit here, Friday morning, but there does seem to be this worry that some of the budget numbers were made to quote unquote work because Medicaid spending, the full amount, won't be clear until the second half of the new fiscal year. So, you know, come January, it seems that the administration is pushing back on that notion that was especially pushed hard by Republicans. You know, I'm not going to claim to be a budget expert. Even after 10 years, I have let other people take the reins on that, honestly. Jerry Nowicki, Capital News Illinois bureau chief, has become our resident budget expert. But, you know, this is a $50.6 billion budget. And of course, one of the huge sticking points this spring among both Democrats and Republicans, though of course Democrats were a lot less vocal about it, was this program for non-citizen healthcare. This is a kind of, I'm not sure if it's a first in the nation program, but certainly not a lot of other states are doing this. Started by initiative of Latino Caucus in 2020. And so for the last 2 years, non-citizens, it started with seniors 65 and over, and then it's now been expanded twice down to 55 and 42. They can take part in this Medicaid-style program. And, you know, I want to remind listeners that non-citizens, if they work, they still do pay taxes. And that describes a lot of folks. So this is a program that didn't actually receive, probably looking back now, the enough scrutiny when it was first introduced, but it was also in the middle of COVID, and so people had bigger fish to fry. This was an initiative, like I said, of the Latino Caucus, and it was kind of let ride through these two expansions, and it seems that the cost has, you know, kind of far exceeded initial estimates. Earlier this spring, the governor's office of management and budget kind of sounded the alarm and said that the estimated cost for next year would grow to $1.1 billion, a huge amount of money, especially because the initial estimate from the governor's office was about $200 million. So that's, you know, like a fivefold increase. And then suddenly this week, the governor's office says, well, actually, we can manage it, the cost down to $550 million. In, you know, the governor had wanted, he said, seven tools to kind of help do that. Those were apparently given to him in this Medicaid reimbursement rate bill that passed late last night, too. This emergency rulemaking authority that, you know, could do anything from, say, capping the program enrollment to, you know, requiring co-pays from program participants. But, you know, the estimated cost suddenly going from $1.1 billion down to $550 million, that is something that I think people are right to scratch their heads at and say, well, so what's the real number? And, you know, as we all know, these budget numbers are, especially for, you know, programs that are kind of squishy, especially for, you know, it's very, very, very hard to count the number of folks who are in this state, you know, undocumented, obviously for a reason. And of course, governors from red states like Greg Abbott of Texas keep sending busloads of migrants to Chicago just to, you know, prove a point. And these people, they are people, they're not just numbers. They have to, you know, kind of make a new lives for themselves. And that's another crisis that we have to deal with here in Illinois. But, you know, eventually it's very possible that they could end up on the rolls of this program. So, you know, enrollment very squishy and obviously growing. But I think Republicans, you know, Charlie, you mentioned Win Stoller and his you know, mention of unfunded pension liabilities. Sure, that is kind of a red herring kind of thing. But his mention of how did the number go from $1.1 billion to $550 million, that's a reason to not trust this budget is truly balanced. You know, I think that's a lot more reasonable.
Yeah, I would say on this program, the focus has been on the immigrants, particularly from Venezuela, who were shipped up here by the Texas governor. But there are a whole lot of people who've been living here a long time who are also not citizens, who also need medical care. Think of the Dreamers, for example. And this program, if I'm not mistaken, was started before Greg Abbott started shipping people to Chicago and other northern cities. And one of the things that was pointed out, and I think it was it Senator Villanueva who talked about how the she was chastising Republicans for pitting vulnerable populations against vulnerable populations. And she pointed out that these folks do pay taxes. You go to the gas station if you're an undocumented, if you're a dreamer, you don't go to the clerk at the Quick and Easy and say, oh, I'm not really a U.S. citizen, so I don't have to pay the sales tax on gasoline. I don't have to pay the motor fuel tax because I'm not a U.S. citizen. No, it doesn't work that way. When you go to buy clothes for your kids, you can't tell the people at H&M, well, I'm not a citizen, so you can't charge me sales tax. They pay those taxes. They pay property taxes. Even if they're renters, they pay property tax because the rental that they pay each month includes on the part of the landlord money to help the landlord pay property taxes. So this notion that they're not taxpayers is totally bogus. And I think it was Villanueva or someone else who pointed out some of these people, because they don't have insurance, don't go for regular preventive care, for regular checkups. And then they get really, really very, very sick and they wind up in the emergency room. They wind up in the hospital. And the bottom line is it costs a lot more than were they insured. And that money comes from somewhere. And either the state can have a program to help out, or the hospitals have to eat it, or as what frequently happens, they raise the rates on everybody else. Because nobody expects the hospital to say when you come in the emergency room, are you a U.S. citizen? Gosh, no, I'm not. Out the door. It doesn't work that way. So I'm thinking that I think this is a good program. And I think, Hannah, as you said, there's really no way of knowing what the costs are going to be, because it's a program that says people who fall in this category, we cover you. And if I'm a dreamer and I have no medical issues, I'm perfectly healthy all year long, doesn't cost anything. Or if I'm a senior citizen in that category, doesn't cost anything. So you don't know. That's unlike some programs like the school funding. There's a flat sum, and this is how much money is going to go out. And we know from day one, this is how much is going to go out. And on a program that's based on utilization, you really don't know. You make your best guess, and then you wait to see how it plays out.
Well, we'll be talking more about the budget as the weeks come along here, as we get a better handle on what this budget actually does. But I did want to point out in this, a lot of what Governor Pritzker had touted in his budget plan, things that he wanted to see done, they are being funded at least up to a certain level, including the multi-year plan for childcare, preschool, making that available to all 3- and 4-year-olds whose families want preschool. That's just one of the things, and also some more money for a higher education monetary award program. So we will talk more about that in coming weeks. But I did want to save a little time here in the final few minutes of the show, because another story that came up this week, and that was the Attorney General Kwame Raoul issuing findings of this investigation into clergy abuse within the Catholic Church in Illinois. Hannah, you covered this. What it found basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, was that the investigation that started under Lisa Madigan, Raoul's predecessor, about 5 years ago, this investigation discovered that the number of young people who had been abused in the Catholic Church through the years was much higher than what the church itself had announced in previous disclosures. So, you know, give us your takeaway from what this report says, and it's a very long report.
Right. It is a scathing 700-page report born of a 4.5-year investigation, like you said, started under Lisa Madigan. It is... it's truly staggering. It is, you know, it found that nearly 2,000 children were abused by, 450 priests dating back to 1950. The report is definitely the fullest accounting of priests with corroborated, allegations against them of sexual abuse. It's a lot like the one that we saw from the Pennsylvania Attorney General in 2018, which I guess kind of inspired the opening of this investigation back then. But, you know, just bigger. Illinois has 20% of Illinois' population identifies as Catholic. That is apparently, a higher proportion than a lot of other states. No surprise, really. Chicago, very big Catholic city. Springfield, even, I've been here for years now, and definitely a lot of Catholic folks in Springfield. It is just truly astonishing. And, this bottom line is that the Catholic Church did not disclose, even half of the names that, are truly on this, kind of final list back in 2018. Before the investigation was opened, only the Archdiocese of Chicago and the Diocese of Joliet had publicly listed names. That came out to 103, though it turned out that, the names on the list would ultimately overlap with names of on the list of the other dioceses that were kind of pressured to put out their own lists. Before the conclusion of this report, it was, basically 320 names of priests, 320 priests and clerics, religious brothers in Illinois that we knew of, that had been abusive. But this report reveals that actually, far more, more than 100 more were not disclosed. And, you know, that is really, really, that's just another kind of nail in the coffin of trust that so many people have with the Catholic Church. You know, extremely upsetting anecdotes in this report. More than half of the total number of priests that now we know of, you know, long ago and sometimes recently passed away. 330 of the 451 people seek closure in their own ways. Of course, abuse in childhood, not just by priests, but, you know, by the hands of anyone, is definitely correlated with worse health outcomes, mental health outcomes, you know, substance abuse problems later down the line. And of course, you know, we also have in Illinois a statute of limitations window that's kind of set in stone, even though in 2017, lawmakers passed a law that said the previous 20-year statute of limitations going forward for childhood abuse cases, that's going to go away. There is a 2009 ruling from the Illinois Supreme Court that says basically you cannot mess with statute of limitations going backwards. That's a violation of someone's due process. So really the only way to undo that, to let, you know, older victims of abuse sue under Illinois law, we would have to open up the Constitution. And when Kwame Raoul was asked about that possibility earlier this week, he declined to say whether he would, you know, want to do that. But I'm sure, like you said, Sean, this is a huge, huge story. Lawmakers were otherwise, of course, occupied with budget stuff this week. But I think that this is something that a lot of people want to talk about going forward. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see at least an effort to open up the Constitution. I couldn't say whether or not that would be successful, but I did want to note that, you know, the deadline for putting something on the November 2024 ballot to change Illinois' constitution, that deadline is early May of next year.
Well, Charlie, I do want to get your thoughts on this. I just wanted to point out it. I think for those that haven't read this, it's just what stood out the most was how systemic this was. It wasn't one diocese. It wasn't just one or two people in power. It seemed to be systemic throughout, at least in Illinois, pretty much the entire Catholic Church leadership. And Charlie, again, I want to get your thoughts on that before we run out of time.
Yeah, and I would say that's exactly the thing. And that's what struck me about the report from the Attorney General, how this was not an isolated incident in one particular parish, in one particular diocese, but it was throughout the state. And the church is divided in Illinois. There's the Archdiocese of Chicago, and then there are individual dioceses headquartered in Joliet, in Rockford, Peoria, Springfield, and Belleville. And one of the things that the report made clear is that the people in charge back in those days, and a lot of them who were the bishops in charge back, but a lot of the stuff went on, they're now dead. They basically tried to cover up the abuse. It was more about, well, we don't want to scandalize the faithful by letting them know that Father so-and-so is a pedophile. And so we're not going to talk about it. And we'll just quietly say, well, Father Wheeler, you can't be in this parish anymore. Here in Chicago, we're going to send you down to Belleville. And that went on. And there were credible reports made to bishops, complaints, and the bishops tended to believe the abuser. And the bishops also tended to chastise those who reported. Now, I'm Catholic. I grew up, I went to parochial schools in Joliet for grade school and high school. I went to a Catholic college. And when I was growing up, eons ago, the notion that you as a little kid would tell somebody that you had this experience with a priest, that would have been daunting. And you would have maybe thought to yourself, what did I do? Was it my fault? Am I wrong? As a matter of fact, to me, one of the most heartrending parts of Raoul's report were the narratives of abuse survivors telling how this happened, and it's in very graphic detail. And there was one that stuck in my mind, a little girl who was, I think, in fifth grade, and she thought that, and the priest told her, well, this is what God wants. And the thing that I found most damning, if you will, is the fact that the bishops tended to want to shield the parishioners, not scandalize the faithful by letting them know that this stuff is going on, without taking into equal consideration what kind of havoc and what kind of emotional destruction does this work on the abused child, the survivor, the lives that were ruined. And the report makes clear, had the first report on Father Wheeler being a pedophile been acted upon and Father Wheeler been kicked the hell out of the church, then the other 15 or 20 kids over the years who were abused and who had their lives wrecked by Father Wheeler would have been spared. The people in charge covered this up. And in a way, that's not dissimilar to a lot of other institutions. You look at corporations, you look at political parties, they try and cover up the wrongdoing. Well, the church in this case was no better.
Well, all right, we're going to save a little bit of time for our notes from the field. And Hannah, let's go to you first.
Lawmakers this week and last unanimously passed a bill that would, really change how red light cameras, speed camera companies were allowed to operate in Illinois. First, it would ban campaign contributions from such companies to state and local officials, and it would also institute a 2-year revolving door ban on state and local officials from either being allowed to take a job with a red light camera company or even, contract with them. It tightens up things that, municipalities who have contracted with these companies have in the past allowed the company to kind of make the call to whether to ticket someone. And so that responsibility would, only now be solely delegated to the municipality. And a couple other things, it would force kind of some statistical accounting of like, are these cameras even working? Are they improving safety? Are they only, kind of pumping up municipalities' budgets? This, of course, is born out of recent scandals that we have seen in the state of Illinois.
Okay. And Charlie.
One of the measures on the way to Governor Pritzker's desk is a bill that would require lawsuits challenging laws as violating the Illinois state constitution to be filed in either Sangamon County, home of Springfield, the state capital, or in Cook County, the state's largest county, most populous county. And the supporters said the measures were necessary because what we've seen in the case of some of the criminal justice legislation, the measure to abolish cash bail, the measure to ban so-called semi-automatic weapons, those measures were challenged in downstate courts, and the courts ruled against them. Ultimately, when the lower court rulings went up on appeal, the appellate court stayed the lower court's ruling, said, no, you got it wrong. And so the argument is, we want to stop this forum shopping by plaintiff's attorneys who file a suit in some downstate county, where they think that they'll get a favorable ruling from the judge. Let's do it in the state's capital or in the state's largest city. And so that's going to the governor, and I'm pretty sure he'll sign it.
All right. Well, that will wrap up this edition of State Week. Thanks for being with us. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. Just look for State Week, and don't forget to join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.